Welcome aboard, you people. Starship Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis up for another day of broadcast insolence. And we got a lot to get to today. Obviously, Judy and the WGN newsroom, we're going to be watching that situation down near Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where there has been a school shooting. We believe it's a mass casualty event, and we'll get you as much detail as we possibly can on that. And everybody is going live with that at this moment, and we will we'll take you there as soon as we get more detail on the status there. We have, obviously, Chicago's still in mourning for one of our own, Chicago police commander, and more details on that. There have been charges now filed, and there's going to be a press conference concerning the charges filed against the shooter in this case. So we will have we'll have details on that as well. Now, at WGN, we are making an historic announcement today that after being the home of the Chicago Cubs for the better part of a century, in the 20th century, now the 21st century will be the century of the Chicago White Sox at WGN, which
is White Sox.
A pretty amazing and astounding thing. Brooks Boyer is with us from the Chicago White Sox organization. He's vice president and chief marketing officer there. And Brooks, I couldn't be happier. I know we talked a little bit this morning during the Cochran Show, as hosted by Pete McMurray. Sometimes that happens on this station. I don't know. Sometimes it's somebody's show. You never know who's going to be hosting it. But I will say this, that this is my second time around with the Chicago White Sox organization. It was a pleasure, an amazing organization to work with. And back in the 1980s at NBC, and now here at WGN, what a great opportunity is, I think, for both parties here, right?
We're very excited, obviously, to be able to be on WGN, and WGN and baseball are synonymous in this market. WGN Radio, WGN TV, it's really the home for Chicago baseball, and it's great to be on there. And whenever we can get on the airwaves and actually have Pete McMurray be silent for a few minutes because he was so excited about the White Sox coming on, I think it's a win all the way around.
You know, it turns out that within the confines of WGN, there were a lot of closeted Sox fans for decades, and they get to come out now and say, "Hey, look at me! Me too! Look at me! I'm here!" And it's a great moment, because as I was saying this morning, that the vast majority of the folks on the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis are Sox fans, including Richard Roper, one of the most famous, or should we call him infamous, Sox fans.
Well, you can call him whatever you want, but you certainly can call him a Sox fan. Richard's been an ardent fan for a long time. A very fun conversation when it comes to the White Sox, and to be able to have the people in the building being able to wear their White Sox gear with no fear. We welcome them all. Maybe we'll even convert some people over there.
I really think that might happen.
Wagon's wide open.
Well, I mean, people who love this station and have loved it for generations, this has been my household for generations. You kind of became a Cubs fan even if you weren't a Northsider because you listened, and maybe now some people will listen to the White Sox a little more.
Well, that's the plan. There is something to be said for the fact that WGN is going to be delivering our product all over the Midwest. Interestingly enough, we got an email from someone today who's a White Sox fan in Western Pennsylvania, very excited about this because at night he can hear WGN loud and clear. So it is great for us, and then that's certainly something we took into consideration as we had our conversations. Nobody wants to go through a process where you're dealing with bankruptcy, which is what we had to do on our own or old flagship. But when you can move to a station like WGN with the personalities and the integrity and all the positive things you can say about what you guys deliver on a daily basis, it's certainly a win for the White Sox and our fans.
Well, it's fun to be. I mean, this has always been one of those stations, one of the most unique stations in America, because it's live and local 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's no other radio station station in America that is like a talk station in America, mm-hmm. or full service, as we call them. We're still a full service station. When there are other stations around the country that just want to be news or talk or whatever it is on the AM dial, we are still what was always referred to as that, because we do sports, live sports programming, sports talk. It is Chicago. If it's happening in Chicago, if it's important to Chicago, it's important to the area or the region, then it happens right here. And, you know, I think in sports, like the Blackhawks were a decade ago when they came on board here at WGN, they were a franchise in ascendance. And that's mm-hmm. what's going to be happening here with the White Sox. You're seeing the White Sox organization has the greatest crop of young up-and-coming players, these kids that are the envy of the rest of Major League Baseball are in your system right now. And you're in a position very much like the Cubs were about, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, as they were starting to, you know, put together these, you know, this great crop of people that have now become household names. I think you've got that in your arsenal.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, when you look at the last three World Series champions, the Royals, the Cubs, and the Astros, all went through the same process that we went through. Obviously, there's a lot of things that have to go well for us and go right for us to be able to hoist that trophy again. But that's every team's goal, and there's a clear path, a clear direction of what we're trying to do, and we're hearing it from season ticket holders. We're hearing it from sponsors. We certainly heard it as we went through this process, finding a new radio home. This is the time to get in on the White Sox because of all the things that you just said, and then you couple that with the experience people have at the ballpark, and now we'll say the experience they're going to have listening on the radio on WGN. We look forward to delivering a great product to all of our fans and hopefully do something that makes the entire city of Chicago proud.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And yes. And as we talked about, too, I talk about this all the time, that the fan experience at the rate is second to none, I think, in baseball, and second to none in Chicago. I mean, from the food to the ease of getting in, the concourses, the amenities, the other, you know, the stuff for kids that are out there. You need to take a shower in the middle of the game. You can do that. There are
food choices we've remarked upon are excellent too.
Yeah, and the seats. I mean, you know, I was with the team back, or it was with the station that was the flagship of the team back when that stadium opened, and it was a you know, there were some issues in the very beginning, and you guys did such an amazing job of listening to the fans and figuring out a way to make that just one of the best fan experiences in all sports in the world, and you can't get enough of that. Any given evening, it's a beautiful place to spend a summer evening and to, you know, go hang out and to the bathrooms work and they're plentiful. I can say that.
That is a bonus.
I can say that myself. about the rate. You can't say that about all the other baseball stadiums in town.
No, you cannot.
So I just want to, and they're doing a great job on the north side trying to make that a beautiful place, but they still... They did the bathrooms and they still got them wrong. So here
we
go.
We should point out his return to WGN too for the Sox, 1927 to 1943. Their games were airing here before, so not just
there. You go. There you go.
Yeah, very excited. We're very excited when you look at the, like I said, the history of baseball and WGN Radio. We're very excited to be that next step for WGN Radio and baseball.
Yeah, Brooks, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks, we're excited. Can't wait to work with you.
I can't wait to see who's going to throw out the first pitch when you guys decide to come out. As I offered up this morning. You know, maybe you guys can have a fist fight or something about it, but maybe your listeners can figure out a creative way to see who throws out that first pitch.
Oh, I know who they're going to choose, and it's just not going to go well for any of us when Violetta gets to do it. All right, Brooks, we will talk to you soon.
Thanks,
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All
go
right.
Sox.
Go Sox. Go Sox, go.
Go Sox, go.
All
okay.
Right.
That might be a different team.
Yeah. I'm learn all that stuff.
Do you see what I'm doing here? I'm trying to meld the DNA. See what I'm just trying to...
It's all coming together.
Yeah, I think when I start with it, it's not going to work out. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick time out here, and then we'll come back. We got a lot coming our way, including Brett Baer is going to join us from Fox News Channel coming up right after Judy tells us what's coming up in the top or the bottom of the hour news. Pro Con Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 yes. WGN. Brett Baer from the Fox News Channel joins us right now, and I know there's a lot going on here, Brett. I appreciate you hanging on for us. First of all, do we have does Fox News Channel have any detail here in terms of numbers here from the Florida school shooting?
So 20 is what we're getting right now. Hurt, but we don't have we're not getting a definitive number as of yet, and you know how these things go. It's early fluctuations at the beginning hours.
Right.
Are you hearing though that a person of interest is in custody? Is that we saw some video of it looked like a younger male getting into the vehicle with police.
Yeah, we saw that too, but they are not confirming that that's the done deal. Like it's completely over. So. I think we're going to find that out in the next couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. We'll continue to be watching that situation. And then in Washington, maybe we live in interesting times, Brett. And apparently we do. Let's start with the circumstance surrounding the chief of staff. There's a lot of rumors swirling around Washington today that this Rob Porter, the handling of the Rob Porter situation might cost John Kelly his job. What are you hearing?
So far, not. But there are long knives are out for John Kelly. There's no doubt about it. And the White House itself is pretty chaotic. You know, he had a very systematic effort to kind of clean up how things were working. And for the large part, from the outside, many lawmakers and people looking at it said he was doing a great job. Now, because of this and how it was handled, it is back to a bit of chaos, and there's a lot of Game of Thrones feel to it inside the White House.
Are the long knives coming from outside the White House or within?
Inside.
Within the White
inside.
House.
Inside.
What do you make of this? I mean, you were the White House correspondent mm-hmm. for Fox News Channel. What do you make of this?
He's a disciplined general. I mean, it just seems it's a good guy to have around.
Well, I make of it that this is. This is what happens in a lot of White Houses, that there's battles for territory and turf and access to the president. And it happens in every administration. It's just it doesn't happen in front of everybody. It doesn't happen out in the public. And this is because of this president and the way he operates, much more public in the infuting that we're seeing inside the White House. This was handled horribly.
Yeah, does it also kind of come down to one of the issues of experience on behalf of those inside the White House? You know, when George W. Bush, for example, became president, there were a lot of old hands, if you will, that came on board, the guys who had worked with his father or with Reagan or, you know, going back, you know, right. Yep. I mean, guys who started with Eisenhower, there were some guys like that, that had institutional memory and understanding and understood how the system works. It does not seem to me that Donald Trump brought those people with him. I mean, when you have Omarosa Manigault Newman as one of your, you know, who had walk-in privileges in the Oval Office, I mean, that just says to me that they weren't thinking very thoroughly about who they were letting in.
Well, that's right. And that's a Kelly changed. I mean, I told you the story before. I went over to the Oval Office early and met with some folks, and it was like Grand Central Station. I mean, people were coming in and out, and everything was, you know, happening all at once. Kelly kind of gave it a systematic approach. But this Porter situation is really going to lend itself to another big story that's you're already starting to see, and that is security clearances. And who has them fully inside the White House and who doesn't? One who does not currently is Jared Kushner, you know, the president's son-in-law.
Right.
Well, he's been working there for, you know, more than a year without a security clearance. And there's a lot of meetings that you go into that if they don't give you the redacted version of the info. So I think this is going to be a big story. I have Trey Gowdy on tonight, who's opened up an investigation at the House Oversight Committee into specifically security clearances and Rob Porter.
Yeah. I mean, it does kind of neuter the argument that the president and some of the people around him have made about how leaky and bad the security system was during the Obama years, or specifically at the State Department surrounding Hillary Clinton and the emails, and how quick people were able to get things out. I mean, it basically takes that argument off the table for him. And I just cannot imagine. I mean, I get the problem that I think a lot of Americans are going to have here is, especially when you're stacking the thing with your friends and family, as the president has done, and you've got his son-in-law who is not properly cleared, and we don't know why. You would imagine that when it comes down to figuring out who to get cleared, that would be a priority right there, especially a special assistant to the president, right? These guys who have those top titles. And, you know, Porter apparently came through the political system. He worked for Orrin Hatch, and that's how people knew him. And so I think they just assumed, well, he must be okay because he's not from the outside. We got to really concentrate on the people who are, you know, have never done this before. And I just think you're absolutely right, Brett Baer. This is going to be the story that comes out of this. And then what heads are going to roll? You're going to find out. I mean, does Ivanka Trump have a proper security clearance? Do we know?
I think she does, but her husband does not. And why is that? Well, there's a number of investigations going on, and they say that they're still going through all this financial data, but there is an investigation currently. So, you know, they're handling some of the most sensitive material. Rob Porter, as staff secretary, would be the guy who handed the piece of paper that the president only reads. You know, there are some things that only the president sees. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the guy who sets it up for him to read it.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have a clearance.
And I get the other question here, too, and I think it kind of comes down to, like, the Hope Hicks situation, too, because, you know, romantically involved, and you know, was she trying to help defend him? Did she know what was going on? Did she believe his allegations?
It sounds like a reality TV show.
It really does.
Well, I mean, but do we want that? I mean, you know, people are like, you know, when people say, well, Oprah's going to run or somebody else is going to run, you know, like, you know, some other celebrity's going to run for president, anybody could do it now? I don't think so. I think if America decides that they don't want this, they're not going for another one, right? They're going to go with a,
well,
you know.
I will tell you this. In the midst of all of this and all of this negative coverage, Republicans in the generic ballot have now taken the lead over Democrats. Who would you vote for in the midterm election? Republicans are up 1 in the latest poll. They were down 12 just 2 months ago. Now, why is that happening? The economy's better, the tax law, what is it? Yeah. In the face of all this negative coverage.
And the president's approval ratings are up.
Better.
Yeah. I'd say that's related to FICA. I don't know who FICA is or how she got on my check, but FICA's taking less of a bite, right? I mean, isn't that the issue?
Great.
Yeah. I think we can blame FICA. All right. Brett, thank you very much. Appreciate
Thanks,
it. We'll
Brett.
See you tonight. Special report.
Sure.
Fox News Channel.
All right.
Here we go. We've got Judy Pilak with the WGN News coming your way in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too. I'm in love with your body. And last night you were in my room. And now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new. Well, I'm in love with your body. Oh, I, oh, I, oh, I, oh, I.
That's a little Ed Sheeran right there, and we have Ed Sheeran tickets.
Nice.
2018 North American Stadium Tour at Soldier Field on October 4th. Listen after 4:30 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to Ed Sheeran in his 2018 North American Stadium Tour. Get tickets starting this Friday, February 16th at 10 a.m. at Ticketmaster.com.
I'd like to see him.
Well, if you're the 19th caller,
no,
a little
I
later
can't
on, you can.
I have to make other arrangements.
Yes, that's true. That's true. That's what.
But that's
have
a good
to do.
Reminder that yep. I have to make those arrangements. So thank you.
That's true. Now Tom Skilling joins us.
Hello, guys. How are you?
We're okay, Tom.
Well, it's
enjoying the thaw. Are we?
Oh, isn't it marvelous? There's a hint of spring in the air out there. Do you know this is the warmest day in 18 around here, and tonight will be the first time in 18 nights that the temperature doesn't go below freezing. We've melted 4 inches of snow. We're down to 10 inches at Midway and 9 inches at O'Hare right now. So how's that?
How's the falling ice going? Because I know yesterday that was a big problem, and even this morning.
It's going to continue to be an issue. We've got a lot of ice hanging off buildings, and also, the only thing to say to folks, just be careful with, the territory you're covering and keep an eye on buildings that have had falling ice there. And if you have any question, they might check it out.
Yeah. My suggestion is you don't look straight up.
No.
You look ahead and up. You look where you're going, not where you are, because where you are is too late already.
You know,
and we've had a couple of significant tragedies in this town from that. And
sure have.
This is one of those.
It's more dangerous than you think.
Yep.
Do you know, I worked at a television station up in Madison, and we had a 1,200-foot antenna out behind our building. And this thing would cover, get caked in ice, and then it would start falling. You'd get these car-sized pieces that would come off in extreme cases. So everybody parked about 3 blocks away, and you just said a little prayer as you walked up the road, into the building. And I gather I'd left the station when this happened, but they had such a horrible ice fall one time, it literally obliterated the building. And I remember somebody said, well, that's the only way they'd get them to replace the cheap building we had been in.
Yeah.
So but that's nothing to fool with.
No.
That is radio. That's the beauty of it. I've noticed, in my neighborhood, there's some of the buildings of lower buildings that is still 4 or 5 stories tall. And I saw guys up on cherry pickers today taking down the ice because
being proactive about the whole thing.
Very good.
Well, the wind blowing around too, it kind of looked like it was raining downtown off some of the buildings.
It did. Yes. My cat was at the window watching the dripping off the balcony upstairs, and it was made for quite a scene.
Can we get a remote? Can we get that cat on the phone?
Yeah. I should have taped that.
That kind of video does great on the social media.
Doggone it.
Cats doing fun things.
Absolutely. I should have thought of doing that. And but I was so amused by that. I was pulling down my data and watching out of the corner of my eye as this cat was fascinated at the melting going on. So
maybe she was thirsty.
Well, I don't think so. I checked the water bucket or the pail, whatever we have out there, dish. And so she was okay in that regard. Or he was. I keep misidentifying her gender.
Oh,
my roommate keeps saying, if you don't get the gender of our animals correct, they're going to have gender identity issues because of my misidentifying.
I don't think that's the problem. No. I'll be honest with you. I don't think they're thinking too. I think they have it sort of figured out in their own head.
Especially cats.
Yeah.
Cats have it figured out.
It's sort of like, and at this point, especially after all the things that we do to them to make them house friendly.
I know.
We kind of mess with them anyway, and they're sort of like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, forget it. As long as they put the food out, they can call me whatever they want.
Right. I'm here to sit on the couch, stare at the dripping water.
Right. Yeah, does your cat do that thing where she kind of ignores you all day, but then comes around food time and acts all lovey-dovey?
Do you know, Anna, this cat is the most remarkable cat, because this cat is friendly and, all the time. I've never seen a cat like this before, but I know exactly what you mean. I've had cats like that in the past.
Where they just disappear. They do their thing.
No, this little one comes up, and we've had her since she was 5 weeks old. We got her at Paws. She was a little rescue kitten, and it's the sweetest little cat. I think
rescues, I don't know how rescues know this, but rescues know they're rescues.
You think so?
Yeah.
I feel that way, too.
I have always found that to be.
Rescue dogs are so grateful.
I know.
That there's a thank you. Like, they were old enough to know that they weren't just being handed off to somebody.
Yeah.
Especially then.
That maybe they were, and then they weren't, and then they're back, and they sort of have a different kind of way of understanding. It's amazing what, we sit around and think, that we're such these highly developed beings.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But then we see what we also do.
Then we look at the politics and everything else and we say we're not so developed,
And the reality is that they do have thoughts, they do think things, they solve problems, they have you know, they have memory.
They do.
But far more. You know, they used to say that, you know, dogs' memory was, you know, incredibly short. And now they're saying that dogs can have lifetime memory.
I believe.
Well, it's just clear. I mean, you know that because people will say in the same breath, they'll say, well, dogs have no memory. But you know, this dog was abused when it was younger. So, then how does it know?
You know, Ro, one of our rescued dogs was abused. We found out after the fact. I mean, burned with cigarettes. Oh, I mean, just so unconscionable sad stuff. And she is the sweetest little thing. And yet there are certain people that will set her off. And I'm certain what she sees in these people reminds her of whoever it was who was hurting her when she was young. So they do remember. There's no question about
that. They do. We adopted one at 3 years, just under 3 years old, that had been abused, a little dog. And anytime you had anything in your hands above him, anything, you know, that looked like, you know, a stick, a piece of paper, anything, he would cower. And it was so sad. And really lasted for a long time.
I know. They understand what's happened to them. And so there's that memory, Ro, you were talking about. Yeah.
They're pretty remarkable to watch because I think it's a math problem. They're always trying to figure out what we're thinking, and we're trying to figure out what they're thinking.
Yes.
Right? It's sort of a... It's always like that, but they're great to have around.
They are. I'm enjoying my little the puppy we have around right now, and she's loving the snow. She's going to be disappointed by the thaw. Yeah. I think actually.
Yeah, I know.
Well, don't tell her.
No, I'm not. True. She won't remember it.
This will be her first.
Maybe she won't remember
her first freeze thaw cycle. She'll always remember it as her first. I remember it was back in 18.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about how long this is going to last. I keep hearing you talk about rain. When are we going to get it?
It'll develop tomorrow. We'll have drizzle developing overnight because the minute we start cooling off, we're going to get that fog to start forming and drizzle, and then that'll build into some periods of rain tomorrow. But then tomorrow night, we get a shot of colder air that comes in for a day and a half, 2 days or so. Much cooler Friday, and Saturday might be a period of snow Saturday afternoon and night. Not a huge thing, but that's the warm air returning again, running over this little lobe of cold air. And so the rain is tomorrow. The sun is back in the cold air on Friday, and then we cloud over Saturday and could snow in the afternoon. But the sun is back Sunday, and we go back in the 40s. Now, next week is one to watch. We've got some rain coming on Monday and Tuesday, and we get awful close to the rain-snow line. And while we don't have a specific system identified yet, that period, the middle of next week, looks a little creepy. I mean, we've got such a tight thermal gradient through the center of the country that one could picture some kind of system running up along it. So we'll keep an eye on that. But when you look out over the next 2 weeks as a whole, we don't see anything that compares to
you know what? I don't like the way you just sort of laid that out there and then ran away from it.
I didn't either. What
does that mean?
That means we've got a tight temperature gradient. We've got cold air, much colder than normal to the west in the plains and Rockies. We've got much warmer than normal weather to the east of us, and we sit in this clash zone in between. I call that troublesome. Our models...
What can happen with that?
Well, you can get a storm to develop along it. What happens is your jet stream winds get stronger because they're a function of how big the temperature change is across an area. And when you get these pockets of strong winds to develop, they're the ones that produce the upward motion in the atmosphere on a large scale that can drop the pressures and get a storm developing. So we don't see it yet, but it's the kind of pattern where that might happen. And even without a well-developed storm, we're still getting indications of precipitation Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week. And I think it'll start as rain on Monday, but it gets a little dicier Tuesday and Wednesday next week. So we'll watch that.
And you get those snowstorms when it's like 28, 30 degrees. Those are the worst.
They are.
Because it's heavy, wet, and they tend to be tons of snow, big water.
Oh, all kinds of moisture. Well, look at what's happening. Do you know Peoria will have 60s tomorrow? St. Louis will have 70s. That's how close the weather. This is February.
It's always the 70s in St. Louis, by the way. I don't know if you've been there, but it's...
A lot of vinyl, bell bottoms.
Yeah.
It's always.
I was kind of talking about the temperature, but I hear what you're saying. Yeah. Well, if you want some real warm weather, get in the car and drive south tomorrow.
Well, we're suffering out here in the desert, Tom. It's 65 degrees out here.
Oh, gee. Excuse me. May I leave the desk for a moment to cry for you? you and Dan Rowan. Dan got on and said, well, we had a sprinkle today. And
It is raining a bit. I will say that. It's a little gray. It's not
the
what
desert.
You'd expect.
What the hell
in the
is
desert,
he doing that for?
I know.
But we got sunshine in the forecast. So.
Yeah.
Pray for us out here.
I know. They actually... actually, it's been a year without a winter out there. The weather has been phenomenal. They're actually going to get into some cooler weather with this new pattern that's developing for a while. But it's, yeah, you guys are really suffering out there, I know.
Yeah, feeling for you, Kev.
Yeah, Kev. Thanks, guys. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Pull through for us. Stay strong.
Are the White Sox giving you champagne because we're the new flagship station, the White Sox?
No, I can't confirm nor deny. I was not cheering some champagne with the Ricks, Rick Hahn and Rick Renteria.
Yes.
No, it's a very I'm pumped. I'm thrilled for this partnership.
Very excited.
Yeah.
We've got a Sox weather day we've done for years out at the ballpark, and I'm looking forward to it. And now do it there with the Sox right here on WGN as their radio home. That's pretty cool.
It is. It's pretty amazing stuff. Yeah. All right, Tom, thank you very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you later, Ro. All right, Anna, Davis, Kevin, everybody.
Bye, Tom.
See you, Tom.
Tom Skilling, Kevin Pell. I've never met Kevin. Is that?
He's checking
in. I'm a good guy, I promise.
He's from Arizona.
He's a very...
rubbing it in.
He's an energetic young man. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who he is.
Man on the make.
Yes, exactly. All right. Right now, Judy Pilak covering all of the crazy news of today in the WGN newsroom. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
We'll be out there. Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook. Tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN TV. Your pick just might be Chicago's Best.
All right, coming up on the program, Matt O'Shea, the alderman of the 19th Ward down in Beverly.
Yeah.
And associated areas.
Is it kind of a funky district?
No, it's good. It's pretty, Beverly and Mount Greenwood, essentially, where the alderman is the alderman. Also, former Chicago Police Department Commander Frank Gross will be here. They were scheduled to be here, actually, to talk about the big thing. There's a big pancake breakfast for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation on Sunday. And
Get Behind the Vest campaign.
We're going to be there for that. And that's it. And now we have other things to discuss. with them.
Do we ever.
And I know that Matt and Commander Gross were, knew Paul Bauer, and Frank knew him particularly well. So we will talk about all of that and remind people of exactly the importance of that organization, this moment in Chicago history, and why moments like this cannot be forgotten. All right. Steph Gosk is with us from NBC. And I don't know, Steph, if you're familiar with this, but the Olympics are on NBC this year. What a great irony. I don't know if you noticed that.
It's incredible. It took us all by surprise.
I just turned on the TV, and there they were. I didn't know.
I'm into them now. I'm officially hooked.
Well, it happens every year, right? I mean,
I don't care.
A week ago, you had no idea who any of these people were, and now you live and die on their very performance. And I got to say, the one person that we knew forever was the flying tomato. Or the red tomato.
The flying tomato. Sean White.
Sean White.
Big, big, big Olympics for him.
Yep.
And he did something.
Absolutely.
Yesterday that was just astounding.
Oh, mind blowing.
Yeah, listen, guys. I mean, honestly, this is why you get hooked on the Olympics. That event yesterday in the half pipe was just one of the coolest moments. You know, you had this. Here he was. It was his final run. You know, the Japanese snowboarder came in and nailed it. He had to beat this tremendous score of 95.25. And you thought, oh, man, is he really going to redeem that terrible performance in Sochi? And he went down and he did. And you could see it in his face. You could see it in his emotion. He was crying. I mean, it was just such a far cry from the kid that we met in the Olympics so long ago. And he came down and he won that gold medal. And it just was such an exciting moment in sport.
It was. You know, he said he was inspired by Usain Bolt, that he'd watched tape of that or video of the Jamaican sprinter, because he had appeared in three Olympics and he thought, could I do it too? Could I go out in style on top and third Olympics? And at 31, I guess that's kind of old for a snowboarder, you know, and look at him. He's on top of his game and takes home another gold.
Yeah, definitely. One of the joys about working for NBC is that you end up getting to go to these events and to see this in person and meet Usain Bolt, and you see, you know, in their eyes, this drive to be here and this drive to compete. And I think most people would say you don't know many people in your life that are passionate, this passionate about one thing, whatever that thing may be. And here to see these athletes and their passion for their sport is inspiring, I think, just on a very basic human level.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. No question.
Yeah, no question. And it is fun. And again, and you hear these backstories. My God, these people had tragedy all within the last year. There was a Canadian snowboarder who was left for dead in the frozen tundra, and you know, survived a grievous injury within the last year, and now he's back and he's boarding at an Olympic level. You've got this story of the American pair skaters,
mm-hmm.
who this young lady was in the hospital again in an induced coma because of her incredible medical journey over the last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, there she is in Pyeongchang skating.
Who would know, right?
And right, exactly, yeah. The Knierums, they really are an inspiring couple. And they had their, the pair skating is tonight as well. You know, the long program, they've already skated in their short program. I don't think they did as well as they would have liked to have done. And they're really not contenders for the medal, but you couldn't help but watch them and be inspired by them. And, you know, they are each other's Valentines on Valentine's Day, and they're such a great team to watch, and they'll be on the ice again tonight.
Is this the couple that can't stop kissing? That one that keeps being pictured kissing?
Yeah, they're among
they love each
yes,
other.
Yes.
I mean, that's a beautiful
thing.
Well,
they're married.
They love each other. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about the Jamaican coach. So the bobsled team, the woman is apparently quitting, and this is the women's inaugural Olympics, and she's got the only sled is apparently what's being reported, but she's quitting. Is that what you're hearing?
I'm going to be honest with you guys. I have not heard that.
Maybe it's just crossed. It's a fascinating story.
Yeah, obviously that Jamaican bobsled team and just in general is such a is such a terrific story. You certainly hope that team can get on track and you hope to see them.
So I guess just what they're saying here is that she owns the team sled. She's been practicing with them, but they shifted her responsibilities so that she's no longer interacting with the actual team members.
Now, does she take the sled with her?
That's unclear. That's unclear. She owns their sled, and again, the maiden Olympics for the Jamaican women's bobsled team.
Steph, before we let you go, obviously you're there in Pyeongchang, South Korea, and there have been some wacky weather circumstances, especially in the downhill skiing area. But other than that, pretty quiet Olympic Games. Are people pretty calm there? Are they comfortable with it? Given there was a lot of concern, obviously, going into this about North Korea and about just politics in general surrounding the. But once the Olympics started, that talk seemed to dissipate.
Yeah, I mean, in large part because you have this North Korea outreach here. You've got the cheerleaders that have been getting quite a bit of attention, as well as Kim Jong-un's sister who was here. There was a handshake between her and the South Korean president. All of that being met with a mixed response here in South Korea. There certainly are people that are very uncomfortable by this, this nemesis to their north that is developing a nuclear arsenal with such a horrific human rights record. There are people here that don't believe that in any way this means that there won't be war down the road. But I think in terms of what might happen during these games and that conflict, which has been ratcheting up for months, I think people were calmed, at least by that presence being here, that for now, during the games, you wouldn't see anything that would be distressing.
Yeah. All right. Mm. Thank you very much, Steph Gosk.
Thanks,
from
Steph.
NBC in Pyeongchang. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Really very exciting stuff to watch.
It is. No, I'm totally into it.
If you want to get away from all the other things that are troubling you in the world, it's a good diversion.
That.
And you get to see some, the best of the best in the world doing what they do. And the sports that we don't ever care about it except for every 4 years.
It's curling. I mean, you got to get into the curling.
I haven't gotten
into the curling?
No. I'll tell you what, the snowboarding,
watch it,
though.
And you will.
That I do.
You do, and you still don't get into it?
Nah,
the intensity in their faces, just the sweeping, and I don't really understand it, but it's fun to watch.
I like when people go down a pipe, and then they somehow end up 30 feet in the air, and it looks like they're going to hit the deck, and then they hit the hole, the pipe, and you're like, how did that happen? That, to me, is just the most amazing thing to watch. All right. We've got Judy Pilak with WGN News coming your way in 2 minutes. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. And now, as fate would have it, we were scheduled to talk to Alderman Matt O'Shea from the Fighting 19th, as I like to call it, down in Beverly and Mount Greenwood. Because every year, Alderman, you put on a fundraiser at St. John Fisher School for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. And along with us from the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation, we've got Frank Gross, and we also have Bridget Shuda, who are the two folks who basically run the day-to-day operations of the foundation. And we were all going to come here and talk sort of happily about this pancake breakfast, which is so well attended every year.
It is.
And so much fun. And such, you know, it's a great family opportunity for people to come out and you know, pay respect to the Chicago police who go out and do this very tough job. And little did we know, as we were all about 30 hours ago sitting in a room talking about this, you know, and fundraising efforts for this year, that we would be in the face of such tragedy just, you know, an hour later. And I want to thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it. But let's start, if I can, with Frank, because Frank, you were a police commander as well, and with decades on the job, and you knew Paul.
Paul was a good friend. Paul was a Paul was one of the go-to guys, and Paul never said no to anyone. I talked to his 18th district. We just came from the 18th district. They're having multiple roll calls, and there's people coming out of the woodwork to offer support for the officers who do this on a regular basis. And it's been since 2011 since we lost one of our own, and that was Clifton Lewis, and that was very hard. But it's we've been blessed for many, many years, and now we had a deal with Paul's his murder. So, but Paul was a good guy, and. And I said he never talked about the people that worked under him. I said he worked side by side with them because that's what kind of guy he was. He worked with his troops, and it shows. He assisted the tech team and won yesterday, and he met evil, and we lost Paul, and he is so going to be missed by everyone.
You know, one of the things that that I think is striking in all the tributes about him is his commitment, and it's sort of a stark irony here. People will remember when a couple of years ago we had the horses on Michigan Avenue, and that was for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. Paul, at the time, was the head of the Mounted Patrol in Chicago Mounted Police, and was instrumental in helping design and create that for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. And that, to me, is, you know, when you stop and you think about it, not only was he such a great family guy and such a great leader of his troops, as you point out, the men and women under his command, but he was he was great with the horses. He was great with those. That's a very complicated process to be able to train those horses and to maintain those horses to be as effective and efficient as they are, because those are police horses. Those are military horses. That's a very specific thing, and it takes a lot of care. And it's, you know, to lose, there are a lot of great men and women in the Chicago Police Department, a lot of great men and women who serve the city in all capacities. You saw the fire response yesterday. It was
heartbreaking.
I mean, Paul cared for the horses just like he cared for the men and women, but he was adamant about getting it done right.
Right.
I mean, when this program came along, he offered us saddles, and he worked with the artist to help design them. And I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was the one who said that the horses should be named after officers. And he worked with the officers to make sure that they remembered that when we have a memorial for an officer like Ben Perez we had over the summer, we bring out the if we can, we can bring out the horse named after Officer Ben Perez.
Right. The horses, the actual horses in the unit,
yes,
are named after fallen officers. The actual live horses are. Which is an amazing thing. I know he did a story a couple of years ago for television, and they went through, and he knew the thing about Commander Bauer was that he understood the history of this department and the history of every September when you do the candlelight vigil and the city turns blue, the skyline turns blue, and they do this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful ceremony at just east of Soldier Field at the actual physical site of the memorial. It is, it's, you know, the stories of those fallen are told, and he knows them. You know, he knew them, and this is a lot. Let's talk a little bit, Alderman, if we could, for just a second, about the response that the city has to have here, and I don't mean the city, the government, because the government is going to do what it's going to do, but how people, the citizens of the city, should be responding.
I mean, I think we saw the beginning of it last night. People lining the streets, not only our first responders, but people lining the streets, showing respect as the procession, as they brought Commander Bauer to the medical examiner's office. And I think we'll see it in the coming days. I could only hope that, like other times in recent history when we've lost an officer or a firefighter, that the family feels that the entire city is lifting them up on their shoulders. I think we're going to see an incredible response over the next few days. And I only hope that this becomes a response that we see moving forward across the board, in that the men and women of the Chicago Police Department are there to serve and protect us. And we lost a protector yesterday.
I think that's what it's it really, I think it hit home to so many people in this city, because you saw someone like Bauer, who, you know, he represented the epitome of law and order, public servant, protecting the citizens, the officer you looked to help you in a situation that he was that guy. And even it spoke to who he was, that here he is, this, he just jumping in to help his fellow officers in a situation that many other commanders, you know, you might, it might not be what you did, right? And this is the guy that's who he was, Frank. That's how you guys knew him.
I mean, he was working on, they did an exercise at the Fire Academy yesterday, and a lot of the commanders were invited. And it's basically a tabletop exercise where you're looking at some terrible things that could happen in the city, and we try to plan for them. I was a commander of special events, and the way the city plans for things and takes events and make sure they're safe, and it's paramount of what they do and the training that goes along with it, and Paul was involved in that. And unfortunately, I mean, they talked about the Thompson Center being attacked at one point, but Paul was involved in that, and he was adamant about that, and he was heading to another meeting with some aldermen concerning another community event, because he was so passionate about taking care of his 18th district. The 18th district is such a critical part of this city. I mean, it's Mag Mile, and it's the businesses and the shops, and it's where we show ourselves to the world. And you can't ever put someone in command of that place that can't handle it. And Paul excelled at it.
And let's just talk about that for a second, too. Because in 18, where you do have you have, as you mentioned, Michigan Avenue. You've got all the high rises along the lakefront. You've got very concerned and very committed citizens in that area who are very concerned about safety. And you know, that's the if you see something, say something crowd, essentially, in Chicago. But you also have in the 18th district, and you have throughout the history of that district, it used to be a very large swath of really, really, really tough streets in Cabrini Green. And now because the housing project has come down, but there are still some very, very, very tough pockets in the 18th district that create, you know, there's still mayhem there. And so to be able to police a circumstance where you have to represent all these business people on Michigan Avenue and all these well-to-do people in high rises who are constantly complaining about something, and then you've got, you know, real, you know, urban dire situations right there as well. It's the most incredibly dynamic job a commander can have, I think, in this city, at least at the district level, district command level.
And he did it without...
right, I mean, and he was a young guy who got that job.
And the smile never left his face, and you could ask him about any different thing or any question that came along, any problem that came along, Paul would be able to solve it, and he wouldn't let it get to him. But I mean, the positiveness of Paul, and he was more proud of his wife and the relationship they had, and his beautiful daughter. I mean, Paul was just the epitome of a policeman's policeman, and the father that everyone would like to be. I mean, he will be so sorely missed.
And thankfully, a man of great faith, too. And I know the family is a family of great faith, right, Bridget?
He is, yeah. I actually was able to see Paul on Sunday at church when his daughter is usually the one to do the readings at the police mass, and she was not able to be there, so Paul got up and was able to do the readings, and that was our last time to see Paul. But jokingly, everyone, when he stood up to do the readings, was chanting that we wanted his daughter. and his comment was, well, you get me. So, while he is a man of great faith, I'm glad that he was able to
have that moment, and that moment of levity for that police mass is it's one of those very special Chicago moments that
absolutely
at Mercy Home that happens every couple of weeks, and it's when we stop and we think about this moment, and there are highlight moments or low light moments, if you want to look at it that way. Mm-hmm. There are moments that get seared into our memories as Chicagoans, and this is one of them. And this one is Alderman, particularly hard, I think, for for a lot of us, because it comes at a time when, you know, there's been so much talk about what are we going to do and about the crime on the streets. And then there's been an increase in crime sort of spreading its way throughout the city with carjackings and other, and you know, other, this isn't just, you know, gang on gang violence anymore. We're running into other sorts of issues. And it's like whack-a-mole always for the Chicago Police Department trying to figure out, you know, which hole they're going to cover. And and now to have something like this at this moment, I hope that there's a moment of where the political side of this, where the guys in the city council, the men and women, and the mayor and all the rest of people, the city fathers, if you will, take this moment and say, okay, now what can we learn about this, and what can we do in Paul's name?
Right. I mean, I don't want to turn this into a political conversation, but we have a broken judicial system. And this guy that murdered Commander Bauer should have never been on the street.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This is a guy that can't be rehabilitated. He's a four-time convicted felon, a violent criminal who should have remained incarcerated.
Right. He had gotten a 16-year bid. About a decade ago, a decade and a half ago, but he did, obviously, in Illinois, he did not spend 16 years.
No.
And his rap sheet is numbers of pages. And they knew who they were looking for. You know, when the tech guys first spotted him, we heard a little bit of the run of events from yesterday, and they spotted him on Laurel Record Drive. There'd been a shooting there over the weekend, and they wanted to talk to him, and then he just ran away from them. Ran up to the street level at Wacker Drive, and it was just an incredibly and then here is Commander Bauer, hears this on his radio, and he runs toward this guy, mm-hmm. not thinking for a second about his own safety, but thinking for the safety of everybody around him. And we need to and that's a part of, I know what the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation does is memorializes these heroes, but you know, this is a moment right now where we can stop and focus on that and talk about the sacrifices that these men and women have made, because there's a woman's name on our wall, but also the what the families and what the city is mourning here today.
And Paul did not want to forget that. I mean, last time, early in June, we have a parole hearing, and we look at cop killers that might be getting out on parole. Mm-hmm. And what the Memorial Foundation is brings together some of the old partners and some of the people that were involved in the shootings. Paul testified at the hearings for the killers of Rossetti and Severin that were gunned down at Cabrini Green back in the 70s when you were little.
That was a sniper killer.
Right.
That wasn't a guy on the street level. That was a guy who was up 15 stories, I think, 12 to 15 stories above this baseball field, which is right now a Target, literally a Target store, mm-hmm. on Division Street. And he just aimed at these guys, and then kept all of the first responders at bay by firing.
They couldn't get to
his weapon.
Right.
They couldn't, and these two police officers bled to death on that baseball field like a war zone, because this guy sat up in his perch and would not let anybody get near them. He was firing at everything. I mean, this moment and that moment, I think, are tied. Let me just stop for just 1 second. There's other tragedy of the day as well. I'm very sorry to report.
It's done
in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where there's been a school shooting, and Judy has an update.
Yes, we are now being told, ABC News confirming that 15 people are dead. We had been talking about multiple fatalities, but perhaps just two. Now we are hearing 15 people dead in that shooting at that high school, Douglas High School in southeast Florida, in the town of Parkland. We will have much more coming up at the top of the hour.
Right. Well,
it's too much.
Violetta? Half hour brought to you by the Hip and Knee Center, where to help you feel new again.
Yes.
All right. Top 5 of 5 is going to get postponed again today because we have with us in the studio from the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation, Frank Gross and Bridget Shuda. And Frank is a longtime, now retired Chicago Police Department. He's an officer, rose to the rank of commander. And knew Paul Bauer very, very well. And also Alderman Matt O'Shea is here. And we'll talk a little bit about what Matt's, you know, every year we do, you do this pancake breakfast for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation at St. John Fisher, the school there in Beverly. Or is that Mount Greenwood, actually?
West Beverly.
West Beverly. Okay. I don't want, because I know that people can sometimes get a little sensitive about
that.
You'll
get corrected.
It's all part of
the Fighting 19th Ward.
It is all part of the Fighting 19th. That is correct. And people who want to come out, that's at, if people want to come out on Sunday morning, that that breakfast is still going on, and I think is going to be pretty pretty well attended.
Yeah.
So, and it's, and you're raising money at the door for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. And we're going to talk a little bit about, for Chicagoans and people who, you know, love this city, whether you live in the city or you don't, but you love the city and you're touched by the horror of this event yesterday and you want to do something about it, there's a couple of different ways to do that. And we're going to get to that in just a moment. But if people want to go to St. John Fisher, it's at...
This Sunday, February 18th, our fourth annual Get Behind the Vest Pancake Breakfast, St. John Fisher, is located at 10200 South Washtenaw Avenue.
And if you can't make it, you can donate another way?
Yes, Alderman? You can go to the Police Memorial Foundation, make a donation there.
Good.
Now, specifically, we should mention here, this is important, because there are a lot of people who set up GoFundMe pages that have nothing to do with tragedies like this. Specifically, the Policeman's Credit Union has set up, Chicago Patrolman's Credit Union has set up a fund specifically for this family. Even if there were a GoFundMe takes a cut off the top. This money, 100% of the money goes directly to this family.
Right. The idea is that everyone on social media wants to, okay, what can we do? And they start these pages, and 8% goes to the GoFundMe people. So we worked with the 18th District, and we worked with the credit union, which is a huge supporter of the foundation. And we want to, for those people, we can't really, the foundation accepts money, and we give money to all the Chicago police families. We can't give money directly to one individual family. I mean, we actually take care of many, and we will be able to give a donation to the family tomorrow for the death benefit, sadly, for the Bauer family. But for those people that want to give directly something to the family, We're working with the credit union, and there's the Paul Bauer Memorial Fund, and every dollar you send to the credit union goes directly to the family. There's no fees or anything like that. They can drop a check off at any credit union, Chicago Patrolman's Federal Credit Union. There's one on the south side. Their headquarters is at 1407 West Washington. So if they wanted to drop a check to 1407 West Washington and address it to the Chicago Patrolman's Federal Credit Union, Paul Bauer Memorial Fund, that will go directly to the family.
And police are really, I mean, he's so well-loved, so well-respected. I've heard that police are coming together to help his family personally through this as well, because I can only imagine what kind of support and needs they might have in this moment.
That's one thing about the police family. I mean, until you walk in our shoes, you have no idea what they see, what these officers see on a daily basis. And they speak the same language. They know what each other's gone through, and they know the pain when we lose one of our own. And all we want to do is try to support them. So,
Violetta wants to break in here, actually, with some traffic news related to all of this.
Yes, Ro. Looks like Chicago police are moving Commander Bauer's body. IDOT is now closing the inbound Eisenhower at Western and outbound Ryan at Polk. So you're going to see some delays increasing there. Inbound Eisenhower is closed at Western and outbound Ryan at Polk.
All right. We'll keep you abreast of that situation as it unfolds here. There, you saw the procession. You know, to me, as tragic as this story is, and it doesn't get much more tragic than this in Chicago.
No.
The response has been amazing. The response by, you saw the Chicago police response and Chicago fire response yesterday. From the moment this incident started, I mean, you see the heroic work of the Chicago firefighter paramedics who were trying to save Commander Bauer's life. You saw the response. We were heading down to McCormick Place for the show yesterday,
right,
and you saw all the command vehicles heading north toward Northwestern, and thousands of individuals got involved in this yesterday, whether they were going to Northwestern to be there for their fallen colleague, or they were going there because it's a family member, or they were helping with the procession to get the commander's body to the medical examiner's office yesterday. And now you're going to see again this response. There are the picture of the firefighters erecting the arch underneath with the flag, the American flag hanging from it, and underneath which the Chicago Fire Department ambulance was driven with his body in it. It's just one of those, again, searing
moving
images.
Moments.
That we will all have, and as awful as this is, I think we can be very, very proud of the work of the Chicago Police and the Chicago Fire in this in this instance.
Let me ask Alderman O'Shea something, because I think a lot of people are struck by it now that we know the suspect's been identified. His lengthy rap sheet has been also identified. He basically is a career criminal who has been in and out of the court system, in and out of the prison system since 1994. Charges were dropped. He was on probation. There are violent crimes. There's drugs. There's a whole slew of charges. The biggest time he served was, what, like 9 years or something for armed robbery in 1998. And I think a lot of people say, okay, do the courts look at this kind of a situation where an officer is shot multiple times, several times in the head, never drew his weapon, by this career criminal, and wonder what kind of could have gone wrong in their system here? Maybe there's something fell through the cracks here. Is that something? Is that the way they'll look at this, or what? How do you look at it? Let me start out there, and then you turn your attention to the court.
I mean, this. There's so much of this that is so frustrating and upsetting. Starting off with the fact that this guy was even out on the street. But to answer your question, I don't know that this wakes anybody up. You know, over the weekend we saw a circuit court judge gave a $10,000 personal recognizance bond and home monitoring for a guy who was walking the street with an AR-15 with 22 rounds in it. Our judicial partners, the judicial partners with the Chicago Police Department, have to take a look at themselves, and we need to really start working together about not only prosecuting violent offenders, but sentencing them properly. If you're given a 16-year sentence for an armed robbery, you should serve 16 years. But time and time again, we see this here in Chicago, where violent offenders get out early and they go back to committing violent crime. And one thing we never hear about anymore, well, we're hearing it now, sadly, with Commander Bauer, but we never hear about the victim anymore. And we need to start talking about the victims. These violent criminals continue to run the streets armed and dangerous. This guy, Ligeti, he shouldn't have been out.
Yeah.
And Paul just talked about that. I mean, he's been interviewed recently, and he talked about the repeat offenders getting back on the street. I mean, he brought that to everyone's attention.
You know, the three strikes you're out law that was in California, was struck down, was one of those, you know, was a response to moments like this in California. And what the problem with three strikes you're out was that you could have there's a difference in people who are using violent tactics and people who are using nonviolent tactics in a crime. And that was where the application of that law, you know, they would say that if somebody's a shoplifter three times, was ending up getting, you know, if you shoplift something over $1,000 or whatever, then they would end up for life in prison. And the people were all upset about it. And I mean, and I think reasonably that's an argument to make. A guy like this, whose rap sheet does include armed robbery, you know, with a gun, who has had a subsequent gun violation and numbers of drug contact with police concerning intent to distribute drugs, and also a conviction of that. I mean, that's the judges need to use common sense. And I get that they argue that there's just not enough room in the system, and that you know, we get the jails are overcrowded, which they're not, which county jail is not currently overcrowded, and they let people out on there's, you know, the I-bond system is without question, that's where the personal recognizance bond, or you know, the low level bond, you know, they've got cases. I was talking to a police officer earlier today about exactly this, a guy who you know made a stop, took a bad guy off the street, but it turned out the kid was 17 and was able to get I-bonded out and just never heard from again. You know, they go to court, the police go to court that, you know, that next week to try to get him held. And this is a kid that had been in trouble a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now until the next time he gets picked up, you know, I mean, the system has been taken advantage of. And, you know, we wonder about all the different factors that go into what have made our streets so dangerous in certain parts of the city. And I think throughout the city now, if you look at it, I mean, you think about almost a million people are in the loop, in and out of the loop on any given business day. And you had seven shots fired at one of the busiest corners in America yesterday. And it's, you know, it's time for us to for exactly the purposes that, or the reasons you just mentioned, Alderman, this is time to stop and say, well, we can't let this happen. And I think we have an election coming up, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of judges' names on the ballot. Nobody knows anything about any of these people. You know who knows about them? The people who are running for judge, and a couple of, and you know, maybe the Bar Association is, you know, checking the names. Mm-hmm. Find a way to and
do your homework.
Do your homework on this. Yes. You can go online, and there's the Chicago Bar Association that will rate these judges who are running. Some of them running for retention. They go, oh, well, they're already a judge. It must be good. Think again. There are a lot of judges who shouldn't have been there.
Right.
There are judges, you know, you don't have to have a law degree to be a judge in Cook County, which is just an absolutely amazing and astounding fact. And there are some people who make the bench. They get sidelined when they get there, but there are some people who get elected onto the bench who do not have a law degree. I mean, it is a crazy, crazy, crazy system. And we need to be, you know, far more cognizant of that than we have been. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how many times I've said this in my career, but, you know, there's a moment where you stop. And we also have this other tragedy that's happening in Florida, too. I'm sorry to not be able to pay the proper attention on this show at this moment for this, because, you know, you've got over a dozen kids, high school kids, lost in a school shooting in Florida today.
Yeah.
And, you know, you stop and you think about moments like this and you think, what can we do about it? And when does the roller coaster stop? When do you stop it and stop and go, we got to take account of this and we've got to make proactive changes in how we address these issues? So, all right. Well, Frank, thank you so much for being here. Bridget, thank you so much for being here from the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. And Alderman, you know, we'll see you Sunday at the Pancake Breakfast. On behalf of the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation at St. John Fisher School, which is 102nd and Washtenaw Avenue, or 10200 South Washtenaw, because there's 102nd and then 102nd Place down there. It seems that you don't ever, when you get into Beverly, it's designed
to... You can get lost somehow.
It's like a casino. It's designed to never let you out, is the way that it goes down there. This is a really, really great event, and I think this year more than ever, it requires attention and support, because there's a lot of people hurting in this town, and there's a lot of Chicago police hurting in this town. There are a lot of city workers, firefighters, and people who, you know, think, but for the grace of God, go they. And then the citizens of Chicago, like myself, who stop and think about, you know, the tragedy of this. And this is, I mean, not only should we pray for the soul of Paul Bauer, but also for his family, for his wife, Erin, for his daughter, Grace. Mm-hmm. But also for the city as well, and the men and women of the Chicago Police Department. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour? Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis, right here on 720 WGN. Coming up, we're going to change gears here and try to avoid some of the tragedy of today, if we can, just to change our minds slightly. Richard Roper will be here in the 6 o'clock hour. Mm-hmm. What looks like it's going to be a groundbreaking film, Black Panther, is opening this weekend.
A lot of buzz about that film.
Yeah. The effects on that film, the way that it's revolutionary, it's being said. About the way that it pops off the screen, you know, for these kind of action, is whether it's Marvel or DC kind of action films. But it
seems like one you definitely want to see in the movie
theater.
Yes,
this might be one of those.
You don't wait.
Or in the, you know, like 3D effects too, because sometimes 3D effects don't quite work.
And it seems like it's working with this.
So this might be something that you know people who like those kinds of films are going to love this weekend. And we also have these Ed Sheeran tickets to give away. 2018 North American Stadium Tour at Soldier Field on October 4th. Stay close. We're going to do that in just a few minutes. But right now, Chicago White Sox broadcaster Steve Stone joins us. And second time in a week, Steve. And this once again, we're making world history by doing this, you and me together, as we're back together again, Steve. You can't get rid of me.
Well, you're working me like a pack mule. This is unbelievable.
Right, get used to it.
I don't have 5 minutes to myself, but with today, it can't be the official day because it's pouring down here, but pitchers and catchers are reporting all over baseball. That's really exciting, and this is terrific, and I get to be with you guys again. How's everything going?
It's going great, and today we announced that WGN Radio is now once again the broadcast flagship, the home of the Chicago White Sox. It has been not since 1942, right? Isn't that correct? That the
something like that, the 30s and 40s when Jack Brickhouse was broadcasting.
Well, you know, the sad part about it is I have so many articles with the wrong logo on it, with WGN from. I have the small nine. I have the large nine. I have the printed. I have at least 20 or 25 different styles or various incarnations of WGN garb, but I don't have any new ones, and I'm anxiously looking forward to that.
Yes. It is very exciting. And, you know, we talked about just a couple of days ago when we were talking to you as we're getting ready for the Worldwide Toast Eric Carey tomorrow, that the White Sox are in a really interesting new position here of they're young, they are some of the most talented young kids coming into the system here. These prospects, they have the best prospect class of any team in baseball right now. And now it's really a question of of how long and how many of them, you know, come through the system as well. What do you look for? I mean, you're a guy who's been around the game your entire life, essentially. Cy Young winner. Let's talk about what you look at when you're looking for a young prospect. Is it about physical ability or is it about drive?
Well, it's called a total package, and a total package, I believe, is epitomized in Eloy Jimenez. That's number one. I think when the history of the deal is done, and the Cubs got a wonderful pitcher and a great man in Jose Quintana, but they paid a high price, not only Dylan Cease, but I believe Eloy Jimenez is going to be a star. So when you evaluate young players, you never know who's going to take the next step. But I will tell you this, and I've never been called the master of hyperbole, but I'm not exactly prone to exaggerate. And after parts of six decades and being involved, obviously, as a player and seeing a lot of organizations and watching a lot of organizations and breaking them down as both a radio and television person, I have never seen a minor league organization, as long as I've been in this game, and I started in 1969, never seen a minor league organization as loaded with talent top to bottom as the Chicago White Sox. And that is no guarantee that they're all going to take the next step. But what it is a guarantee is they have magnificent talent, and now it's up to the talent evaluators have done their job, and they'll continue to do their job because, you know, with a high pick in the draft this year, that goes on. That's a yearly thing. And you have to restock, consistently restock, because it's a game of attrition. You lose players and guys get hurt. But the talent they have to work with is unquestionably as good as there is in the game and the envy of just about every other organization. So it's up to the player development people to bring this out of them. And when they do, you're going to find some really interesting guys. You're going to see a plethora of guys that throw in excess of 100 miles an hour. I stood behind them. First of all, they look like a basketball team. And second of all, they explode the glove. I fear for the catcher's hands because, I mean, it sounds like an explosion when a lot of these guys throw a fastball. And that doesn't guarantee with anything, but you can't teach speed. It's either there or it's not. It's like teaching power. You can teach it a little, but if you don't have it, you can't find it. And this is what these guys have. They have, you know, they have just top to bottom, incredibly talented guys. Some have the total package, some don't. But when you ask, what do you look for? You look for an intense amount of competitiveness. That and desire are very difficult to teach. You either have it or you don't. If you have it, then talent is non-debatable. You have to have talent or you wouldn't be here. Then you have to be coachable, because if you're not coachable, you're not going to learn the lessons that professional baseball have to teach you, and understanding that there's different steps. One is teach you to be a professional player, because these guys come from diverse backgrounds. The other is teach you how to be a major league player, because it's only less than 5% of the guys who are professionals make it to the major leagues. And then the next step is to be a major league star and to learn how to stay there and be a winning player, and that is the most difficult of the steps. But until the first two are taken, you can't even think about the third. If you get the third and you teach that, you have a star player, and that's what the White Sox are looking for. That's what every team is looking for.
Yes, Steve, you talked about the competitiveness part of prospects and young players, and I think we saw that last year. Remember, all we said it game in and game out towards the end of the year was Ricky's boys don't quit, because they fought for Rick Renteria, the manager, and just being around the team today, there's some genuine excitement out of the clubhouse, and they really seem to love Rick Renteria. How difficult of a job can that be for Renteria at this point of the rebuild, where you have all this talent, and as much as you want to win, in some ways, individual growth is a little bit more important. So how tough of a job is it for Rick to, one, manage the clubhouse to keep that enthusiasm, and two, try to put a competitive team on the field?
Well, Rick is a natural-born teacher. This is not going to be the year they're terribly competitive unless I have lost every bit of my evaluative skills sometime over the winter time. So I think
how do we find that out?
How do you diagnose that?
You're going to find it out at the end of September when the team wins plus or minus 6-8 games on either side of 500. But that being said, this is the year when you're going to figure out which guys can take the next step forward, which guys will fit into the team concept, which guys you want to make part of your past, which guys you want to go into the future with, which guys you are suitable and should trade, which guys you should keep. And knowing that and understanding that a player's ceiling, this is very difficult for evaluators. I can look at a guy with great talent. The great evaluators will look at the ceiling and say he's there. The great evaluators will also look at a ceiling and say he's got another 30% to go. We got to keep him. Let's trade the guy whose ceiling is there already, and that's how you have trades that don't work out particularly well. And, you know, I personally believe the trade for Eloy Jimenez, even though Jose Quintana is a good one, that trade won't go down exactly like Lou Brock, Ernie Broglio, but it's one that I think the Cubs are going to remember. But, okay, so let's give a little credit to the entire Cub organization because they are trying to win each and every year.
Yeah.
And to do that, you give up Eloy Jimenez and you get Jose Quintana because he can help you win today. Eloy can help you win for many years to come. That's not what the Cubs are all about right now. That's what they were about at one point. Now they're about sustained excellence, and they've done a pretty good job of getting there, and that's exactly where we would like to go. We want to get to the point where every year in the conversation, the Sox are looking for a championship each and every year, and I don't think it's that far away.
Do you think that we'll be mentioning Eloy Jimenez's name as a this season on WGN as the White
Sox
take the field?
I'll mention a number of times. I don't know if he's going to be there, but I certainly will mention.
Right. I mean, is he going to be? You think he'll come up for a while? Is he ready?
I don't know because that is above my pay grade,
okay.
And so much is at this point. But I will tell you that. Will he have the ability to come up? Yes. Can he play at this level? Yes. Will he be a star at this level? Yes. I just can't give you a date.
And he's a 21-year-old kid from the DR, which, by the way, that is the worst description ever because that actually represents about a third of all of the people in baseball right now. But he's
just 21. And Rick Hahn, the general manager, all he's sort of said is that these guys will force the issue themselves. They're still young. Jimenez and the Michael Kopechs, they're just 21, so there's really no rush. And you can wait for it to align when that competitive timeline does come, which could come as soon as next year because this free agent class that I'm sure the White Sox are going to attack is stacked. So, you know, this rebuild is probably not going to take as long as some other teams or even the length it took the Cubs because of the amount of talent acquired by Rick Hahn in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
So we live in hope, and last year was the first year of it. This year will be another year. We would take that World Series around the time the Cubs got it in their rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? We're all with you right now, Steve.
We're on board,
Steve. We are
totally
all
love that idea.
Couldn't be more with you than we are right now.
Yep.
Yeah. We would take that, and I think it's going to be exciting. I know that everybody to a man is very happy to be with WGN. I'm particularly pleased because it was a big part of my life for many years, and it's nice. It's nice to be back with you guys, and we're going to be talking a whole lot in the future, and it's going to be a lot of positive things. I'm looking forward to it.
I just can't wait to go hang out this summer at the rate because it's or the G spot as we call it, but they're probably going to make
sure
us
we can do that anymore.
Stop calling us that, but. It's such a fun evening out there. I love that ballpark.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and so
and great food, by the way.
Yeah,
yes,
I mean,
I've noticed that.
Best food, and there's no line at the good beer. You know, like they got the beer concession every 5 feet because they've known they got to keep people fairly, you know, really liquored up, and they do have just it's a great experience all
it
the way
is.
Around.
Great
so,
ballpark experience.
Yeah, so I'm looking very much forward to that, and having the whole team out there. We're going to be out there a lot of those nights, so we really appreciate
it. Come for the fun, stay for the baseball.
That's the way. That right. Eventually, we're going to be coming for the baseball. I feel that right around the corner. All right, Steve Stone. Thank you very much, my friend.
Steve.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye. Right. Have a good rest of the day. Bye, Anna.
Bye, Steve.
All right. Let's and goodbye, Kevin.
Bye, Kevin.
But we'll be hearing from Kevin again at the top of the hour news. Right now, Judy, tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour news. Pro Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, we've been promising it.
Yes, we have.
And here we go. Right now, I have got a pair of tickets to go see Ed Sheeran at Soldier Field on October 4th. It's a 2018 North American Stadium Tour. Caller number 19, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, caller number 19. Get tickets starting this Friday, February 16th at 10 a.m. at Ticketmaster.com. All right.
Good luck.
All right. We've
That's amazing.
Trying to get as many things in. We've just had one of those days where the tragedy here in Chicago was almost unbearable yesterday. And then today in South Florida, this tragedy where now the death toll is at 17. Isn't that correct?
17
in this in the circumstance. So really, really, really rough.
School shooting. Yeah, Broward County Sheriff's Department confirms 17 people lost their lives in Parkland, Florida. Shooter also identified a former student, Nicholas Cruz, 19 years old.
So tough couple of days here, but we do have other pieces of business to which we can attend, and one of them is Roper Reviews, and Richard is joining us. And by the way, this is obviously you know, lifelong Chicagoan yourself, and you've covered this city as a reporter and then a columnist, and when an officer dies in the line of duty in Chicago, it is a big deal. When a police commander dies in the line of duty, it's a rather uncharted territory. You know, you have to go back to the 1970s, the last time an exempt member of the Chicago Police Department died, in uniform. And this is a difficult moment, especially when you hear the level of heroism that.
Oh, amazing! Right, takes your breath away. I walked over there to the Thompson Center yesterday. Just really, honestly, I mean, obviously, you always want to check out it for the news aspect, but really, just out of respect and to see some of the officers there and show support. And there are a lot of people doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you saw the signs today in windows. You know, thanks CPD and the flowers and everything.
Yep.
Man, just incredible stuff.
Crazy moment. All right, so we've got a couple of films coming out this weekend. This, by the way, Roper Reviews, brought to you by Arkadec. I don't know, do you want to start with the Nicolas Cage movie, or do you want to start with Black Panther? Do you want to start?
I'd love to talk about Black Panther, because we have had such incredible tragedy, and this isn't one millionth toward assuaging any of that, but people will want to escape to the movies as always, and Black Panther's a movie people have been talking about for a long time, not just as a superhero movie, but a cultural touchstone, because this is, as a lot of people know, probably the first Marvel film, and really the first major superhero movie to have an African-American lead, and also practically an all-black cast, which is something that if you talk to a lot of kids, and I know a lot of schools that are talking about bringing kids to see it or urging kids to see it, and I'm pleased to report that it lives up to all the hype. I don't want to bury the review and tease it. I just want to tell you guys, it's a brilliant film. And it's a really cool story. And yeah, there are going to be some discussions about the politics of it and isolationism, and because this country that Black Panther comes from kind of believes in that. But first and foremost, it's a great story about family and role models and, yes, superheroes. So if people don't know the story, Chadwick Boseman, who's becoming one of our movie stars, he was Jackie Robinson in 42. He was Thurgood Marshall in Marshall. He was James Brown. And now he's playing T'Challa, who becomes Black Panther. And the story is he is the heir to the throne of a small African nation. Now, to the outside world, this is one of the cool things about this franchise. To the outside world, it's an actual country. It's a fictional country to us, but it's called Wakanda. And we think of it, everybody else thinks of it as this poor farming nation. But the truth is, the rainforest is just a cover for the actual metropolis. It's the most technologically advanced and wealthiest nation in the world. But they have kept that a secret from the outside world because their feeling is, we won't accept aid, but we can't help others, because if we do, we're going to ruin this good thing. They happen to be in the one spot on the earth that has something called vibranium, which is the magic metal that creates all kinds of wonderful things. So this is the struggle in this movie. Chadwick Boseman is Black Panther, and Michael B. Jordan, who we know from Creed and a lot of other movies, who's another great young star, he plays his rival, who actually grew up in America but is from the country originally, and he believes they have a duty to share the wealth and share their resources with oppressed people. So that's the argument in this movie. You've got Black Panther defending his nation and the bad guy making a pretty good point that we can't be isolationist and we got to help other people, but he also has kind of a by any means necessary attitude. So here's a confrontation between Michael B. Jordan, who plays Eric Killmonger, and Chadwick Boseman as the Black Panther.
You're standing in your house, serving justice to a man who stole your vibranium and murdered your people. Justice your king couldn't deliver.
I don't care that you brought Claw.
Only reason I don't care you where you stand is because I know who you are.
Ooh.
Intense stuff. And yeah. there are some who are saying that that the T'Challa Black Panther character kind of sounds and acts like Nelson Mandela. The kind of in similar cadence there. You notice that this also has tons of big roles for females. Angela Bassett plays the Queen Mother, as she should. She's Black Panther's mother, right?
Perfect.
And Forrest Whitaker is the wise uncle, right?
Gosh.
I mean,
how could
he not be the wise uncle? Lupita Nyong'o, who we love, Academy Award winner, is that Black Panther's on again, off again love interest. She's a super spy for the nation of Wakanda, kind of CIA operative. Mm-hmm. And Danai Gurira, who's Michonne on The Walking Dead. She's the one with the braids and the sword on The Walking Dead. She's the general of the armed forces.
I love that.
And Letitia Wright plays Black Panther's younger sister, and she's the Q of the story. She has a lab where she shows him all the cool toys and gadgets, just like in the Bond movies. So not only is it this amazing cast, but there's all these strong roles for women. There are two white characters, Martin Freeman, plays a CIA agent, and Andy Serkis, who's the guy that's always in the CGI things. And they were both in Lord of the Rings, so they're being referred to as the token white characters.
I get it.
Oh, I see what they're doing.
See what I'm doing there?
I get it.
They're the token.
Yes.
And that's not my joke. Somebody else came up with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I love this movie, guys. It's got. I don't want to make it sound like it's too heavy, because it's got a ton of humor and great action and really cool messages. But it's also beautiful to look at. And the score actually reminds me of The Lion King. A lot of, tribal sounding music and that beautiful, those soaring a cappella vocals you heard in The Lion King. So everything is done perfectly. Four stars for Black Panther, guys.
Now, there's something else that about this film that people in Hollywood have been talking about, and people in the industry have been talking about, because it's using new technologies to create the effects and to create the 3D.
Yeah.
Because you can see it. Did you see it in 3D or did you see it in 2D?
No, I saw it. In most cases, I think you're better off just seeing it in 2D.
I think that's true.
Unless it was shot with real 3D cameras, like the giant IMAX type camera.
Right. And I happen to, I always subscribe to that, because 3D, at some point it gets annoying. It blurs out on the sides of the screen.
Exactly right.
It doesn't, you have to be right in the center of it. Even as great as Wonder Woman was, Wonder Woman in 3D, it's a better movie in 2D than it is in 3D.
I agree.
But people are saying that this 3D is a... I'm like Donald Trump when I say that. People are saying...
It's the best ever.
But the trailer, which was in 3D, was the best 3D I have ever seen. Because it takes up the whole screen. Yeah. And it is... There are moments where... You know how they always have like one... moment where something is coming at you.
Yes. Early on, you get a spear.
Yes, just to prove that it's coming at you.
Innkeeper, give me some beer. And the guy throws the change at you and you duck,
You feel like it's coming at you.
There's a moment. I think it's an homage to that train pulling into a station movie that had people run in like in 1890 that had people running out of the theater because it was a train pulling into a station.
Like,
in black and white and grainy and not moving at the right speed, but yet people still freaked out.
Yeah.
There is a moment in this where... There's a chase scene with a train.
Yeah, yeah. Right? They have a high speed magical elevated rail in this country, like advanced technology. Yeah,
and that scene in 3D is phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. The visuals are amazing. They do. It's amazing because a ton of this movie was shot in Atlanta, because everything is shot in Atlanta now. But
mostly the Georgia State credit.
Yeah, and a lot of tax breaks, but a lot of studio stuff. But then when the action takes you to Oakland, they go to Oakland. When there's a long sequence in South Korea, they went and shot there. They shot in London, so you could see. And that's one of the things I like about this. Even though this one nation is kind of a magical place, it all takes place here on Earth. and there's interaction with the American government and with, you know, people in London and real life human beings and even the superhero stuff. Black Panther's a lot closer to Iron Man than someone like Thor or Superman, these immortals from other planets who really can't be destroyed. So he's in a suit that gives him magical powers, yeah. But he's a vulnerable human being who can be killed.
Hey, I think that Marvel has done an amazing job of developing these characters, both mm-hmm. for film and for television. They've created this entire universe
they have.
Now of people who, just like that, that these are humans who have maybe one superpower, but not the rest of the stuff that's going to keep them alive forever. They're vulnerable in some way.
If you get stabbed, you bleed. And again, you know, some of these other characters, and that's why I was always a fan of the Dark Knight trilogy. Same thing. You know, mm-hmm. Bruce Wayne is a really rich guy with a lot of great toys. But, you know, when you get into the realm, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy, all that stuff, that's fun cartoon stuff. But here there's more risk. Yeah, it's a superhero movie and there's a lot of magical stuff, but there's a lot of real world stuff going on. He goes to the United Nations at one point, you know, because they're trying to figure out what's happening in Wakanda.
Is it one of those films where if you're a superhero, you're like you're a fan of those types of movies, you'll love it. But if you're not, are you still going to love it? You said 4 stars.
I think so. And it's also, we actually saw this character a little bit in the last Avengers movie. In fact, we saw the assassination of his father, which has him taking the throne. You don't need to know any of that with this, too. You mm-hmm. could just pick up the story. They do a great thing in the opening titles where they explain the history of the land and the culture and what they're all about. And then you just pick up the story. So to me, it's one of the few superhero movies where, you don't have, there's not a ton of the inside jokes. And mm-hmm. we're kind of all a little tired of that anyway, mm-hmm. where people are going, oh, my God. That's Dr. Gulab from, you know, DC Comics 27.4.
They're all
the early version.
Me.
Yeah, you know, it's
totally
just it's very self-contained, and yet you see, especially a lot of these female characters, I think could easily have their own movies, and I wouldn't be surprised if they start getting
some spin-offs. That's fascinating. Sounds
really
like a lot
cool
of rich
stuff.
Characters in terms of full characters, not just the central two
that.
Or three.
This is the golden age of this, you know.
Absolutely.
Ever since DC and Marvel have been. This has been they've been competitive, and it's interesting to see, but now there's so much new product that they put out, and new characters, and I know that they start in graphic novels, I don't know, or in comic books. I almost fear meeting the people who actually do that.
A
little scary.
Yeah, to invest in that. But it is amazing the richness and the depth of these things. And Stan Lee, who is, you know, the Marvel guy, right?
He's the co-creator of Black Panther, even 50 some years ago, I guess.
Was just in the hospital over the weekend. And there was the fanboy community was like in, because Stan Lee is 90 something years old.
Yeah, you're right.
And still going, right? Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty... it's pretty amazing. So, I hope it does well mm-hmm. at the box office, because
it's going to do huge at the box office. They're projecting 160. I'm saying it's going to do about 170 million
this
weekend. I think it'll do 170 million this
weekend. And it'll be gigantic. These things globally are monsters. Right?
It has that international look. And one last thing, you know, I can't overemphasize this: between Wonder Woman and Black Panther, for women and now for African Americans, and in this case, a lot of mm-hmm. African American women, that's a new thing. You know, it's easy for us as white guys to go, superhero movies. But, you know, think of all of them, Superman and Spider-Man and Iron Man and Thor. It's all a bunch of muscular white dudes. And it's cool to see this sea change. And you saw the effect Wonder Woman had on the culture last year beyond the movie.
Yes, right. And that was a huge
on little girls
success.
Across the world.
Well, and you've seen the actors as they do the publicity for the movie talking about just that. It's great to be part of a project where your narrative isn't just wound around a white person's narrative, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, their narrative is central to the whole story. Awesome. I'm going to see it. I decided.
Cool.
I don't usually go to see the superhero movies, but I'm going to see this one.
What the kids? What age is appropriate?
Yeah. It's like a lot of them. I think if you're 12, you can handle it. If you're 8 or 9, it's a little intense. But
okay, I'm in.
What about 28-year-olds? Yeah.
These two,
Hey, I'm not 28. Don't put me there.
Mainly with you two, it's the height requirement. We'll have to get the measuring stick out.
Well, sure Violetta does show up. One child, please. Are you attended?
Can you pay as a child? Have you ever tried that?
You just have to carry me and they won't know.
I'll sneak you through the back door.
She kept her head down.
Then she rolls out 100 from a gigantic gangster roll of cash.
Yeah. It's like,
and she goes, I said one for child. All right.
Wow.
Push her in a baby buggy. I'm kind of Big one.
All right. Well, we'll check in on this Looking Glass movie, the new Nicolas Cage film.
Oh, man.
Nicolas Cage makes a movie every hour on the hour because it's court ordered. But
pay the bills.
Right. This bankruptcy judge requires it. But we will get to all that. But first, Judy, incredibly dire news in the newsroom today. Mm-hmm.
And then there's this. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago, 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
All right, Richard Roper is here. We're doing some reviewing. And Nicolas Cage has made a film. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, Nicolas Cage is a guilty pleasure of mine.
Absolutely.
I watch even the wacky sort of made for... It's not even made for Netflix. It's made for like some other pay service you never heard of before. You know, that it's sort of like, what? Who's got what?
They just say, you know, video on demand or in demand, on demand, on demand. And then it's always playing at one theater in each market. So they'll be like, you know,
for Oscar.
Check it out at the Pickwick. Or, you know, I mean, or like a lot of times, I mean, like Pickwick's a great theater, or Arclight, but it'll be just one theater that likes to do something a little different, which I give them a lot of credit. But it's usually one or two theaters in the Chicago area. And one or two in New York and L.A., just in case Oscar comes and not. I'm sure it is a contractual thing, like it has to get a theatrical release, and then it's available, you know, as you're just clicking around. However you can call up a movie. So Looking Glass is the latest. This is the second crazy Nicolas Cage movie of 2018, and we're at Valentine's Day, right? So at this pace, he'll have somewhere between 12 and 17 movies coming out this year. So in Looking Glass... He and Robin Tunney is actually a Chicago area actor. She's been in a ton of movies over the years. They're a married couple. They had a horrible tragedy in their past. So now they've decided they're going to get away from the city and they're going to buy a remote desert motel on Craigslist. So that's probably not the greatest plan. That if you, when you pull up to the motorway motel in the middle of nowhere, you know, the motel is the kind of places where the parking lot is actually the entrance to your room because the door's right there and you get the physical key.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the better for break-ins.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the kind of place where felons hang out and felonies occur. So they're the owners of the motel, and within minutes of taking over this rundown motel, which looks like it was decorated in 1971, within minutes of arriving, strange things start to occur.
Oh, boy.
Mm.
You were with that girl the night she died.
She needed a friend is all. I was her friend. What, are you a cop?
No, I just run the motel.
Well, why don't you go do that then? I'm meeting someone.
I'll move when they get here.
Yes, you will. I don't know anything about that girl or any other girl.
Yeah, you do. You just said you were her friend. So what else do you know?
I know. Get away from me.
That's when he decides to become a detective and look into. He's talking to the lesbian blonde dominatrix there, who always is in room number six, as you'll find out. So all kinds of crazy stuff happen. We don't know if it's almost got a little bit of a Shining vibe, because we're wondering if Nick Cage's character is imagining this stuff. And of course, he discovers there's two-way mirrors in the hotel, so he can spy on the guests.
Be a voyeur.
And then one night, a bloody pig shows up in his swimming pool and. Oh. He says to the trucker, I'll get you your room in a second. I got to deal with this dead pig in my pool. And the trucker says, well, at least you got breakfast for the next couple of days. So it's that kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little dark. Mm-hmm. I'm giving it 3 stars because Nicolas Cage, as we've talked about before, never phones it in. He's got a big giant black toupee and a big bushy goatee and large round glasses because he just loves to do different hair for every movie. And he's there in the moment.
Because he can't do his. Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's playing this grieving, disturbed husband who sucks on cigarettes and pounds down Coors Light every night and, you know, sees strange things happening at the motel and begins to think that maybe murder is afoot.
Wow.
I would just leave it at that. Wow.
I do like him a ton.
You do?
I do.
He's not my favorite.
I know. He's a very... you know, there's binary response to him. You love or you hate Nicolas Cage. Right?
Yeah.
But I just think he's... I always get a kick out of every performance. I love those National Treasure movies. His earlier work, his earliest work, was fantastic.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah. He's in some of the finest movies. He does. He's still got a little bit of a weird kind of It's creepy, but I'm not sure if it's creepy vibe to him. But I'm
that's
conflicted.
It. I think I'm picking up on that.
Right. It might be a creepy vibe. Maybe not.
Yeah.
It's still fun to watch. Mm-hmm. All right. So you are giving 3 stars to Looking Glass.
I am.
4 stars to Black Panther. Go see it in the theaters.
Yes, go check it out.
All right. All right. Coming up, We've got Judy Pilak's news in 2 minutes. Concho with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Richard Roper is still with us, and Mark Locke is joining us right now in the studio. He is a creative director for Saturday Night Live, the exhibition at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. This is a really, we're going to be out there doing our show in March, March 5th. We got a lot going on before then, but we'll get to that in just a second. But this is a really, really, really unique opportunity in Chicago to see this, that so much of the memorabilia from Saturday Night Live is right here. This is probably the best exhibition, I hate to say it, but it is true, in the history of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. And it is, it's the real stuff from the 500 years now that Saturday Night Live has been on the air.
Feels like it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. 1975.
Going back to King Tut, I think.
Yes, it is.
There you go.
Exactly. Nicely
right.
Done.
Yeah. It's Meet the Press and Saturday Night Live are the two longest standing things on NBC.
That's it.
And it seems to me that this is an opportunity that people, this has never been mounted before, this exhibition, right?
No, well, we had it in New York, and we thought it would be a standalone, and that would be it. It was 12 blocks from 30 Rock, and never before seen things. Saturday Night Live and Broadway Video, Lorne Michaels had never done an exhibition. Mm-hmm. They had requests from the Smithsonian, but things stayed locked up there at 30 Rock all these many years. Mm-hmm. But to celebrate the 40th season, we were open for 1 year in New York. And then it was so successful, we said, need to take this on the road. What's the first choice? Well, of course, Chicago. Chicago, with its connections, you know.
Right.
So something we're very, very proud of. Over 500 artifacts, sets that you can climb all over. I mean,
like the Wayne's World couch?
The Wayne's World couch.
I can't wait to see that.
Just go and pile right on it. It's not a behind-the-glass kind of exhibit, as you can imagine.
And it's very hands-on also, because you talk about the behind-the-scenes process of SNL, which I think is super cool for anyone who's interested, your kids especially, who would be interested in that process of the writers to the production and the big meetings they have and everything. Everyone through it.
Well, and it works out... It's such a, you know, sometimes you take somebody on an exhibition experience and they don't know what's around the next corner or when the exhibit ends. Well, of course, it ends, this exhibit, Saturday night, but it starts on Monday when Lauren meets with the guest host and the writers do. Tuesday, the writers go off and write on their own. Wednesday, the read-through is done. Thursday, incredibly, Thursday morning, the sets are built, wardrobe starts, hair and makeup starts. So it's this race to the finish line.
And the sets, as I understand it, the sets are they made on-site at 30 Rock, or do they do them off-site and bring them in?
Over the years, it's been changed a little bit. Now the shop is out in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, the shipyard.
Wow. And that's where, when they go out and they do those, the week of, when they go out and they do the pre-recorded stuff they do.
Yes.
That's also there, right? And at Silver Cup, they do the...
Silver Cup is usually the studio used, unless they use the location. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's also starting on Thursday as well.
Right.
So
because you wonder how they build these commercials that look like they take
very impressive
months to do.
Especially in recent years, the production values of the pre-tape stuff is competitive with anything, right?
Yeah.
It's really, really great stuff. But to see these, especially, I got really close with the set design department. And what's amazing about the crew, if you will, we all know the young cast, right? Mm-hmm. And they stay young. But the crew and the machine that is SNL, the 75-year-old set director, or the head of the set department, the lighting director, I don't think he'd mind me saying this, in his 90s.
Ooh.
I mean, a 90-year-old lighting director.
Right, and he was in there in his 40s when the whole thing started.
Exactly.
These are guys
from,
you know, the Dave Garraway years on the Today Show. Literally, that worked like at NBC that have worked there that long. It's a really cool exhibit, The idea that you can, like, you know, I'm one of the 8 million people, like, the picture on the Wayne's World couch is great. And the notes you can see, you know, notes to Bill Murray, you know, or from Bill Murray.
Yep.
The props, you know, the chocolate donuts that John Belushi powered to Olympic victory. You know, remember the box? They were like, it was like a Wheaties commercial, but they were little chocolate donuts.
The Bass-O-Matic.
Yeah, all of that stuff is there.
Bass-O-Matic
really cool.
Bass-O-Matic is there.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was a labor of love. You know, I had the pleasure, especially in this town, of doing the King Tut exhibition at the Field, the Titanic years ago at the Museum of Science and Industry. Always had a very special spot in my heart for this town.
Uh-huh.
Oh, those are fun, if you will, exhibits to be part of, but imagine hanging out at SNL for the year. I hung out pretty much the whole 40th anniversary to create the exhibition.
Well, things like, you know, in show business, props are props, right? And they get reused or misused or abused or lost. And in some cases, some people see the future and they steal them. How was it possible that the Bass-O-Matic was still, which was just a blender, but how was that still around? I mean, how did they do they curate these things?
Well, I don't think I'm speaking too much out of school. I think when I went and we said we're doing an exhibition. Well, I think I have this. I think the church lady set is somewhere in that hamper on the third floor of the, you know, there wasn't a lot of that kind of organization. The wardrobe department in recent years has started to curate and to catalog, like you said. But many things were found, like I said, cardboard box. Hey, look, I found one of these.
Incredible,
you know,
right?
And it kind of
fits. Land shark.
Yeah. That's how they found King Tut's liver. I remember they found it in a box somewhere. Thank you very much. Yeah, right. I know that you did that.
That was the beauty for the crew. And I felt most rewarded doing the exhibition for that team that puts it together every week all these many years, because they're very much respected, honored, and recognized in this exhibit, and things they brought together of a real labor of love for them as well to bring this thing, the whole exhibit, together.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it's here in Chicago, and I don't know where it's going next. I don't even want to think about it, but this is it.
It's here for a long time, though, right?
Yeah, until the end of the year, which is, you know, we opened in October.
Nice.
To be open to the end of this year is the longest exhibition stay that I've ever been part of, but because of SNL's connection to Chicago, it makes sense.
You know, I got to shout out somebody here it made this actually really possible for Chicago, is Larry Wirt.
That's right.
Who, the longtime executive at NBC, now runs the Tribune operations here, Tribune Media operations.
Mm-hmm. And, how do you spell that? I should know this guy. Is it L-A-R-R-Y?
Yeah, he's a bit of a force of nature here in Chicago.
Yeah.
But
he is.
He worked tirelessly to be able to, you know, the Museum of Broadcasting Communications it should be here in Chicago because it's been so important. Chicago's been so important to broadcast in the nation.
Yeah.
But it is, but you know, it's had, you know, leaner years, and now to bring this here, you know, makes the statement that this really is an important feature in the landscape of broadcasting. It's a tourist attraction, and this particular exhibit is so special to people generations, because, you know, it's like grandkids are now, you know, grandparents are talking about the first time they saw John Belushi pull out a samurai sword.
That's right. Yeah. God, and to see, it's one of those, and I was a little surprised at this, where you see three generations going through together.
Yeah.
Grandparents, parents, and children. Yeah. And the grandparents, you know, if they're in their 70s and
80s. They all have happy memories right there in that building.
Exactly right. And to your point about Larry, he just was incredible to make this all happen. Yeah. The whole staff at the museum just was very committed. We've taken two floors of the whole space there. Like you said earlier, the biggest exhibition ever done there.
Mm-hmm.
And also things
beautiful
like space. A full-scale recreation of home base. I mean, when you walk into the last space and it's Saturday night and Tina Fey hosts this special edition of Saturday Night Live, I promise you, you feel like you're at 30 Rock, the toughest ticket in New York, you know? With all due respect to Hamilton, you can't buy tickets to SNL, right?
I know. Well, you get the rehearsal show or the show.
That's right.
Very lucky to have seen the show a couple of years ago live. And it is you cannot believe how they put it. You're lost in it while it's going on, and you have to go back and watch it again.
It's true.
Because when you're seeing it, because it's a blizzard of activity, and when you're thinking, okay, now when you get into the space, you're like, my God, this is so small. How are they able to do this?
That's right.
Like all of television. And yet, like the Weekend Update is at home base. It's right in the center. The band would be right behind where they're doing, you know, Weekend Update, and they're moving stuff around. And it's just, it is, and the performance space for the music.
Small,
is the
tiny.
Size of this desk.
It's incredible.
Essentially.
Yeah. But
it's
looks amazing. Looks great on TV.
Totally.
That studio was originally built for the orchestra, the NBC orchestra. So when they first fit SNL in there, it really made no sense.
Right.
But 43 years
later,
it's making
Seems
all the sense
working.
In the world.
Yeah. Oh.
All right. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. This is a great job. And thank you for your contribution to all of this. King Tut thanks you, for God's sake.
Yes.
Well, he's still around, by the way.
The convergence of Steve Martin and the real King Tut is really strange.
What a career. You should write it. You should have a coffee table book, my friend.
Full circle, Mark.
All right. Mark Locke, go see the Saturday Night Live exhibit at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Right now, Rob Martier is going to tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour in the news.